Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to share, including later on, we're going to be hearing from a board-certified physician who did a special investigative report on the war on cholesterol. It's part of what is called Heart of the Matter. It is looking at how we lower our cholesterol. Now you think, okay, we have statin drugs. Yes, we do. In fact, they're a very profitable part of the pharmaceutical industry's marketing. However, what you're going to find out is that what we've been told in all those ads simply isn't true. So you're going to see the truth in this. It's a longer investigation. And then try to find this up on ABC Australia, ABC Network Australia. They had it up. They took it down. Not a word about this anywhere in the media. Also today, we're a warlike culture. We love wars. So says George Carlin. We'll hear what his perspective is on that. Also today, I mentioned the real state of Libya prior to us intervening and destroying Gaddafi. Now, today, from Alexander Meshavi, there is an article about Libya. Lawless, alarming, unpredictable, dangerous. Why isn't anyone taking credit for this? You created it. This administration created it. Hillary Clinton created it, bragged about it. Also, early menopause is now linked to chemicals. Green Med Info, Margie King, talks about how women can get menopausal symptoms 4 years earlier and last a lot longer. Also, the dark side of America's reluctant part-time workers. Scientists detect mysterious warming in the U.S. coastal waters. And this is real serious because they're seeing water that is 4 degrees warmer than any other warm water, and even warmer than what it's ever been. So what does that mean? Well, I'll tell you the consequences of that. Also today, something you have not heard, we'll report on it exclusively. The editor of a major German newspaper says he planted stories for the CIA. This is really important because the other day we talked about how many journalists working in the mainstream media and alternative media are CIA plants. But he just came out, and he came out because he's dying. Also, it was a great day for corporate America when the U.S. Senate passed the fast track. Shameful, though it was, I'll tell you the consequences of that. And the latest on health and healing, including preventing diabetes, the mulberry leaf, and also new research, olive oil destroys cancer cells in 30 minutes, Rutgers University, and how the average American woman now weighs as much as a 1960s man. Why is that important? Well, men were overweight in the 1960s. Now they're obese. That means women have gained tremendous amount of weight, an average of 17.6% weight gain in men and 18.5% in women in just the last 30 years. That's not cool. Also, we have an autoimmune epidemic in the United States, and we're not paying attention to it, and we should. Plus, a commentary today about what we need to do to make a difference. According to Chris Hedges from Truthout, make the rich panic. We'll see what he means. Let's begin. First up, I've been doing a lot of research on diabetes. I've worked with a lot of people who have full-blown diabetes or pre-diabetic. It's relatively easy to get that person's blood sugar under control, to have them lose weight, to overcome the diabetic neuropathy, and to help heal a lot of the ulcerations on their legs and feet that would otherwise lead frequently to amputations or death. But a lot of people have a big issue when it comes to giving up those carbs, because They've got used to how they feel. And one of the reasons you get used to how you feel better after you have your carbohydrates, is because of what it does to the brain. There are receptors in the brain that when you have a refined carbohydrate, give you almost an opium-like or opiate fix. And that's dangerous. So what do? Well, go towards the whole grains and get off all refined grains. Go towards that which will stabilize your blood sugar in a smoothie in the morning. For example, having almond butter, cashew butter, walnut butter, pistachio butter, pecan butter. Those are just nuts that are raw, that are ground up, made into a nut butter. And then you can take that into your smoothie, and that'll help stabilize your blood sugar for about 5 hours. You could also have some plant-based protein. Plant-based protein with a nut butter, you're going to be really good with your blood sugar and energy for about 5 to 6 hours. Then you want to bring down those blood sugar spikes. So let's just say that you have an issue and you're not going to be as disciplined with your diet as you ideally should be, or you're working with someone who is not that disciplined. There are a couple things you can do. One is you can make sure that they take, after each meal, a chromium tablet. Chromium picolinate, 200 micrograms, will help. But also new research shows that mulberry, M-U-L-B-E-R-R-Y, leaf, and that helps stop blood sugar spikes. Now, when you consider that about 80% of all American adults have blood glucose levels that are out of the safe and healthy range, and that puts them at a greater risk of heart attack, stroke, kidney failure, and blindness, then it's a very serious issue. So just one can of soda a day causes a 22% rise of being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. That's one can per day. Now imagine the hot weather and people exercising or people outdoors. Very easy to take that one can of soda. And while sugary sodas are a culprit, there are many others that are less obvious but will spike your glucose. Remember, all carbohydrates ultimately are broken down into sugar. But fractions of that carbohydrate that have fat will be used by the body as fat, as amino acids, as protein. But these high fructose corn syrup, beverages, pastries, ice creams, they're really bad for you. And that makes up 40% of the sugar-based sweeteners in the United States. So in this particular study, a study by the American Journal of Chinese Medicine found that mulberry leaf helped to improve diabetic control of type 2 diabetes, effectively lowering blood glucose concentrations. And it reduced the bad cholesterol while raising the good cholesterol. So this is natural, non-toxic, inexpensive, and easy to use. So the key benefits of mulberry leaf are simple. You can reduce the post-meal blood glucose. So if you have a tablet of it, take it after the meal. It can also give you higher insulin sensitivity. It can reduce your appetite. It helps control your overall 24-hour blood sugar cycle and improves cholesterol levels. So that could help a lot of people. Now, I believe in consuming a lot of different olives. I also believe that you could have your own home-based business if you found different, more interesting ways to stuff olives than the way they're currently stuffed with almonds, blanched almonds, or garlic, or some of the things they put in. For example, if you were to make a little lemongrass poultice and stuff it in, that would be delicious, because I do that. I make a little pate with lemongrass, and it has the flavor of lemongrass. And then I'll stuff that into grape leaves as a flavoring agent or into olives. But no matter how you eat the olives, they're good for you. And the more variety you have, the more the polyphenolic compounds, which are the therapeutic compounds. So therefore, if you had, let's say, 6-8 olives in a salad, terrific. Or you could have those in a pasta, or dice them up and put them into a brown rice, or put them into a hummus. According to Rutgers University and Hunter College, quote, the oleocanthal, A therapeutic compound found in olive oil is the subject of a new anti-cancer study performed by nutritional science and cancer biology researchers with the School of Environmental and Biological Science, Rutgers, and Hunter College. Programmed cell death takes approximately 16 to 24 hours. And the dynamic new research just published in the Journal of Molecular and Cellular Oncology was really important. When exposed to the compound in olives, a polyphenol compound, the cancerous cells died within 30 minutes to an hour. And while researchers previously understood that compounds in olive oil were capable of killing cancer cells, until now, such short programmed cell death had not been observed. And more fascinating was when the team looked closely to surmise why this programmed cancer cell death was occurring under such rapid conditions, they discovered the cancer cells were being killed by their own enzymes. And not only one isolated type of cancer cell, but all the cancer cells that were examined. So, for those who have cancer, make sure you're getting extra virgin, organic, cold-pressed olive oil, and start having more dishes with lots of olives in them. Okay, that can help you. And for the average person, it's good for you to keep you healthy. Now, we've got a big problem with weight in the United States. It's huge. We're the fattest nation on earth. And that leads to a higher propensity for heart attacks, strokes, cancers, depression, dementia. And we're hitting new records of obesity all the time. Quote, this is from CBS News reports. The CDC data show that more than one-third of U.S. adults over the age of 20 are considered obese, and 69% of American adults are overweight, too obese. And one in five U.S. children between the ages of 12 and 19 are obese, and 17% are overweight. And they're looking and saying, wow, why? Well, how about this? How about the fact that we don't eat the way we used to? There was a time in America that many people will remember where you actually ate together as a family. You took your time and you ate pretty healthy food. Most of it was homemade food. And depending upon the season and where you lived, you had a lot of local varieties of items. Not so today. Today, it is considered completely normal to eat almost all processed food, and 75% of that is eaten out of the house. And then even the idea that you can order a pizza in, and what are you getting with a pizza? Well, first you're getting the crust. That's a refined carbohydrate with over a dozen different chemicals in the powder itself. There is no nutritional benefit to it. It's just pure calories. And also, when it's baked, you're getting a byproduct in the baking process, a chemical called acrylamides, which is a carcinogen, and damages your DNA. Then you're getting the meat. Generally, it's salami. Salami is one of those unique meats that doesn't go bad. Well, it's not supposed to go bad, but everything goes bad in time. And so they have preserved it very heavily. Lots of nitrates are in there and other preservatives. In effect, they've embalmed the meat. And when you embalm meat, just like a human body, you could dig up a corpse from 100 years ago and it'll be shriveled, it'll be dehydrated, but it'll still have skin, muscle. And you think, okay, how'd that happen? Now take a corpse that's not embalmed and you dig up a skeleton with hair. Everything else is gone. It's been eaten away by microorganisms, including those that are naturally occurring in the body. Because when you die, when anything dies, including an animal, its immune system that defends it dies with it. That means that the pathogenic bacteria immediately proliferate. So the bad bacteria proliferate in staggering numbers, and the good bacteria are gone. And hence, you have rot. Now, how they used to get meat tender? Well, it was simple, because meat wasn't fat back in the 1800s, 1700s, 1600s, even the 1900s. In fact, if you're old enough to remember any of those Westerns, Kit Carson, Lash LaRue, Whip Wilson, Cisco Kid, Lone Ranger, Hopalong Cassidy, Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, John Wayne. Well, more often than not, you saw them in some film on a cattle drive. And a cattle drive would take cattle from the northern parts of, let's say, Montana, Wyoming, North and South Dakota, and drive them south down to Texas, where they had slaughterhouses and corrals where they would be purchased and then shipped around the United States. The cattle was very lean. It had to be lean because they went on a long cattle drive, and on that long cattle drive, they'd lose a lot of weight. So they were exercising every day and only eating grass. And all hoof stock, whether it's a giraffe, an elephant, or a cow, is supposed to eat grass. They're not supposed to eat grains. That's also true for horses. In any case, by the time they got down there, they probably had between 2 to 5% body fat. Not only did they have little body fat, but the muscle they had was extremely strong, very tight. And so when people had the meat back then, they would generally just have it fried and or boiled. And so it was tough. It was not chewy. I mean, it was like chewing on a piece of leather. So someone came up with the great idea of aging it. Now, how did they age it back then? Relatively straightforward. They would have two rooms, one that would be cold with ice in it, and the other would be warm. And so they put a carcass on it, and when the carcass was warm, it would start to biodegrade. It would decompose. It would rot. Morbid, dead, rotting, smelly flesh. No different than when you hear someone said, and the smell of death hung in the air. That's what they're talking about. And then you take that into a colder environment, and it slows it down. Doesn't stop it, slows it down. Even freezing does not stop deterioration. That's why you should not keep some frozen items like dairy or meat longer than about 6 months, because even at zero temperature, bacterial decontamination is still accelerating. And now you have slowed it down, just like a morgue slows down decomposition and you don't have the smell. So now you take it back in the other room and leave it there for 20 days, 30 days, and then you can go in. And when you can actually take it and rip it off, then it's ready. And then they sell it, but they put a euphemism behind it. And it's prime aged. Now, how many times have you seen prime aged? Now, people would never buy a piece of meat if you saw how it looks. A piece of meat looks no different than if you cut your finger. Cut your finger. What are you going to see? You're going to see red blood initially. Then as the blood dries and coagulates, and you're going to see it turn kind of purple, and then dark, black. Well, that's no different than what happens to a piece of meat. And it kind of turns of a gray, blackish, and it's got clots all over it. So imagine going to a butcher place where you see that in a window or in a restaurant, you're not going to want to eat it. It's going to be aesthetically unpleasant. So they either baste it, inject it, or spray it with chemicals that retard that to keep it looking pink, much like they feed a certain dye in salmon food to make its flesh pink, even though it's not. It's not wild. Wild salmon, yes. Farm-raised, no. So now you've got a piece of dead, morbid, rotting meat that you cook. Much of the bacteria, depending upon the temperature you cook it at, will be killed, but there are certain things that won't be, and they can set up life in your intestine. So just keep in mind, when you're eating, and you're eating a pizza, you're eating a piece of rotted, embalmed flesh. And even though you may say, good, 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 it's bad for you. And it causes cancer. But so does the other items. Now then you've got the cheese. Is it real cheese? Was it made by bovine growth stimulating hormone? Probably. Does it have pus in it? Most dairy does have pus. because when a cow has mastitis, they're supposed to be withdrawn from the milking line, but you can't tell just by looking at a cow whether or not it has an infection in the udder. So pus gets through. Now, how many different cows do you have milk in a glass? It could be 100, 1,000. Just like when you eat a hamburger, it could be from 100 different cows. So just imagine drinking pus with every glass of milk and having pus in your cheese. As long as you don't mind, a lot of young people, they don't care. They could eat anything. One of the nice things about opening up a vegan restaurant for young kids today, you can have the worst service in the history of the world. They won't notice. The worst food, they could care less. And they could all get sick. So what? They can twitter on the toilet. So that's what we're at. And now you got your pizza. And you got it delivered home. That means that a good healthy meal, you're not going to have. So why don't we take a look at all the ads, and what you're getting in those ads, and show me one of those ads is really for organic, healthy food. So when we're obese and we're sick and we have all these infections, and when we have heart disease and diabetes, you don't have to look any further than what we put into our bodies. There are other things that will contribute, but that's the main one. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. To have you all over the world, people are listening in, looking for inside information. You will not hear me covering what everyone else covers because I feel that is a distraction from the real important issues more often than not. Let's go to some of the issues that I consider very important, and I'm going to go through them in rapid succession. All of these will be posted on my website so you can get the full stories. First up, from GreenMed Info, early menopause, which is massive, is linked to chemicals. Quote, most women probably don't want to rush into menopause, but chemicals you encounter every day could speed up the onset of menopause by close to 4 years. It is estimated that we live in a world saturated with 80,000 man-made chemicals. They're in pharmaceuticals, food, personal care products, cleaning products, cars, clothing, computers, and innumerable household items. These chemicals persist in the environment and accumulate in our bodies. Many, known as endocrine-disrupting chemicals, interfere with hormone activity. Now, they've been linked to certain cancers, metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, early puberty, infertility, and pregnancy complications. Now, in a study published in the journal PLOS ONE, a team of researchers has linked exposure to these chemicals with the early age of menopause. In fact, these chemicals might send you into menopause 4 years earlier. And they looked at over 31,000 women, and what used to be a woman could expect to be in her late 40s, early 50s. Now, you could get into menopause, depending upon your chemical exposures and your diet, in your 30s. Fracking is linked to increased death in infants, an alarming new study from Reinhard Loki from Alternet. Quote, a new study has linked gas hydrofracking to a higher incidence of infant mortality, perinatal mortality, mortality means death, low birth weights, premature birth, and cancers in infants and children. Funded by the Pittsburgh Foundation and written by Joe Mangano, co-founder and president of the Radiation Public Health Project, a nonprofit educational organization. The study used data from state agencies to examine 8 heavily fracked counties in Pennsylvania, 4 in the Northeast and 4 in the Southwest region of the state, counties that account for the majority of the state's natural gas drill wells and gas production in all categories. But child cancer increases were greater in the Northeast counties than they were in the 4 Southwest counties. Quote, the information presented in this report supports the hypothesis of a link between exposure to toxic chemicals released in fracking and increased risk of disease and death. So, one more good study to have on your side to shut down gas hydrofracking in your county. Now, what we're doing, we're putting every single quality study, including peer-reviewed literature studies, in one place with documentaries, so that if you want to have enough information to go before a town commission or a state authority and petition for closure, you'll be able to have good quality information on your side. Scientists pinpoint to responsible ineffectiveness of the 2014-15 flu vaccine. Now, by the way, this is from the Y-Star Institute. This is one of the mainstream orthodox medicine's major institutions. Quote, I'll quote verbatim, viruses like influenza, that's your flu virus, have the ability to mutate over time, and given the flu vaccine's administration during the 2014-15 season, we're largely ineffective at preventing the spread of the flu. It appears the virus that recently circulated had taken on mutations not accounted for when last year's vaccine was developed. Dr. Scott Hensley, Ph.D., assistant professor at the I-STAR Institute, led the study published online by the journal Cell Reports. Quote, we identified mutations that were common to flu isolates, and we engineered these viruses to allow us to characterize these mutations the following month, and then they found it weren't effective. So here's the takeaway message. All the time you're given the advice, get your flu shot, get your flu shot. In fact, they wanted to mandate New York State until we fought it. One, every healthcare worker in every healthcare facility getting a flu shot, 4 of them. We said they were ineffective. They're non-scientific. Now they want to get them to school kids in California, mandate them. We said taking vitamin D3 when your immune system is challenged would do far more in a good way than these. We also showed you science that for senior citizens, it was not only known to be non-effective, but dangerous. We also showed you that there was a 5,000% increase in miscarriages in those pregnant women given the flu shot. We showed that, and that was in a journal, and it was confirmed by a CDC scientist. So no pregnant woman should be given any vaccines. So finally, they acknowledged it. We're the first to report this in any of the media in the United States. So the next time they tell you, I'll get your flu shot, say, why? Last 2014-15 season, it was ineffective. Nobody could then be guaranteed that it would help that particular individual. Also, Libya. This is the latest on Libya. This is from Alexander Mizai. Quote, the situation in Libya is continuing to develop alarmingly. The current situation in the country is characterized by a complete lack of any sign of a state system. Libya is being devoured by civil war, disintegration, and the seizure of its territory by a huge variety of forces, most notably the Islamic State. Despite the fact that they have a so-called prime minister, it's completely ineffective. At present, there is no government. There are multiple governments. Parallel government bodies are operating in Tripoli that are also have no control of the situation in the country, just individual parts of the former Libyan government. There are a total of 5 competing governments in Libya, not counting those that have not proclaimed themselves to be a government, but are simply taking power in their own hands. Not a single one of the Libyan governments have managed to resolve the country's main problem, putting an end to the mass violence and establishing at least some kind of control. The situation was triggered, of course, when we bombed them. So the takeaway message is you had a country, and I gave you, and I won't repeat it, all the things that even a corrupt Gaddafi was engaged in. The proof now historically is the Libyan government had nothing to do with the Lockerbie bombing, but we had a stable government, and the people of Libya had the best standard of living in all of Africa. Now there is no country. It's merely a group staging for terrorists, and yet no one in the United States responsible for that has taken credit for it, and I believe they should. After all the news commentators, including, I might mention, many on Pacifica stations. And I wish people would remember that the next time they listen to one of these programs and think, oh, this is a good source. Is it? These same sources were bragging about bombing Libya and then going into Syria. Not a source I would care to listen to. And from our environmental segment, this is from Tim Radford from Climate News Network, quote, from London. Oceanographers are puzzled by an accelerated burst of warming sea that threatens the fisheries of the American Atlantic coast. Meanwhile, off the West Coast, scientists report that they have been baffled by a mysterious blob of water up to 4 degrees centigrade warmer than the surrounding Pacific, linked to weird weather across the entire country. Research colleagues at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute in Massachusetts report in the Journal of Geophysical Research, Oceans, that the ocean off the U.S. Northeast continental shelf has been warming at unprecedented levels for 13 years. Their findings came after analysis of data from sensors that are dropped 14 times a year from the container ship, which for 37 years has traveled between New Jersey and Bermuda, dropping these down to 700 meters. What they were startled to discover was an unexplained and unprecedented rise in the water temperatures that had been linked with an equally mysterious sea level anomaly. Sea levels are going up, but they're going up faster off the northeast coast of the United States than anywhere else. Quote, the warming rate since 2002 is 1,500% faster than from the previous 100 years. And that was from the senior scientist, and one of the authors of the study. So what does this mean? Go back 7 years ago when I was talking about the 12 tipping points. Now they're 31. And I mentioned at that time that one of the worst things that could happen is if that the conveyor belt that takes warm water from the south, down around South America, takes it north, takes it off the coast of England up through Ireland and Scotland and around, and then brings cold water back down. If that should ever slow or be interrupted, you could throw all of that part of the world into a terrible temperature change. It would go down dramatically, making it something like out of the 12th century, where you would have frozen land, you would have severe winters, you'd have virtually no summers. Imagine what that would do. So that's very possibly what we're seeing the beginning of right now. And we could see that actually happen in the next 3 to 4 years. Also, I want to let people know that every single legislator that voted for Fast Track, you should let them know that you're going to try to make sure that you vote them out of office. Not one of them, including the president, should be given any apology ground for what they did. They betrayed America, and I predict that the consequences, when fully enacted, of the Trans-Pacific Partnership will destroy the quality of life for over 3/4 of all Americans. And I hope that before it is signed by the president, it hasn't been yet, but I hope that all the unions and union members bring a boycott to Washington, D.C. and stand on the Capitol steps, every single union, because every single union is going to be impacted. Because if you think that we've had a loss of jobs up to this point, about 30 million Americans in the last 35 years for outsourcing, they will decimate what remaining jobs are left. If you think you're protected because you have a doctorate and you're at a university or you're in a major corporation, think again. They have 20 times educated people willing to take your job for 1/3 of what you work without any guarantees, benefits, no compensation outside of a very small salary. And these people are coming. Also with this new, they around what they have hidden, they can bring in people and replace almost any person in any job. Tenure is going to go by the way. Everything that we had valued in the past that we had spent 50 years working for, you'll be losing in a five-year period. So if you think that you're not affected, you are. Interesting, the other day I went for a run in the park. And just as I was entering the park, this guy sitting there on a bench and combing out his dog said, "Hi, Gary." And I said, "Hi." He said, "Saw your office moved." I said, "Yeah, we've moved." And we had a conversation. And that conversation lasted about an hour. And in the process, I found out what he does. He happens to be the chief financial officer of a very prominent New York cultural institution, meaning he's like the second most important person there. And I said, "How long have you lived on the Upper West Side?" He said, "A long time." And I said, "You know how many small stores have closed? I walked down to Lincoln Plaza the other night to go to a movie, and I counted 63. I see it all the time, all the time. And I said, "That's the mauling of the Upper West Side, where there's no longer brand loyalty or even, you know, that relationship that a neighborhood had with the people who'd worked there. There's no legacy loyalty anymore." And I said, "Look at this new Trans-Pacific Partnership. If they pass this, everything that we value will be changed. You'll only see mall stores, multinational stores. Mom and pops will be gone." And we started talking about the import of people on these special visas that can come in and take the place of American workers. And he said, "It's already happening." I said, "I know it's happening." So just remember that that's what happens when they pass this. So I think that's important. It's just shameful, absolutely shameful. Also, what can we do about it? What can we do about all of our many problems? We can become proactive. How do we become proactive? Well, there's several ways. One way, I believe, is that we must stop believing that we can reform or improve any governmental agency or any private corporation. None of them are going to change. The governments are just bloated bureaucracies that are controlled by special interest groups. They should be there, small, lean, and working on behalf of improving the quality of Americans' lives. They should be there to protect us from abusive chemicals to the destruction of our environment. They're actually facilitating these. It is worth understanding this. It does not matter to the corporate rich who wins the presidential election. It doesn't matter who's elected to Congress. The rich have the power. They throw money at their favorites the way a gambler puts cash on his favorite horse. Money has replaced the vote. The wealthy can crush anyone who does not play by their rules. And the political elites, slobbering over the spoils provided by their corporate masters for selling us out, including the Trans-Pacific Partnership, understand the game. Barack and Michelle Obama, as did the Clintons, will acquire many, I believe, hundreds of millions of dollars once they leave the White House. And your elected representative in the House or Senate, if not a multimillionaire already, will be one as soon as they retire from government and are handed seats on corporate boards or positions in lobbying firms. We do not, by any measure, live in a democracy. We live in a political system that has legalized bribery, exclusively serves corporate power, and is awash in propaganda and lies. If you want change you can believe in, destroy the system. And changing the system does not mean collaborating with it, let's say with Bernie Sanders. Now, granted, he can be a nice person and he stands up for certain issues that I would support. But doing so, by supporting him, thinking you're getting a really different person, no. No, he's playing by the cooked rules of the Democratic Party. Profound social and political transformation is acknowledged in legislatures and courts, but never initiated there. Radical change always comes from below. As long as our gaze is towards the heavens and people of power, as long as we invest hope in reforming the system of corporate power, we will remain enslaved. There may be good people within the system. And as Chris Hedges suggests, and I would agree, Sanders and Elizabeth Warren on many levels are examples of that. But that is not the point. It is the system that is rotten and it must be replaced. From Ralph Nader, quote, "The only way you can get the party's attention is if you take votes away from them." So he said to Chris Hedges in a phone call, quote, "How serious is he? He makes Clinton a better phony candidate," talking about Sanders. "She is going to have to agree with him on a number of things. She is going to have to be more anti-Wall Street to fend off and neutralize him. We know it is all BS. She will betray us once she becomes president. He is making her more likely to win, and by April of next year, he is done." Then he fades away. "We must build mass movements that are allied with independent political parties, a tactic used in Greece and in Spain. Political action without the support of radical mass movements inevitably becomes hollow. And that, I think, will be the fate of the Sanders presidential campaign. Only by building militant mass movements that are unrelentingly hostile to the system of corporate capitalism, imperialism, militarism, and globalization can we wrest control and get our democracy back. The gates are controlled by two parties indentured to the same commercial interests," says Nader. "If you don't go through those gates, if you do what Ross Perot did, you might get 19 million votes, but not one electoral vote. If you do not get electoral votes, you don't come close. And even if you do get electoral votes, you're up against a winner-take-all. This means if you lose, you don't build for the future as you would with proportional representation. The system is locked-out system. It is brilliantly devised. It is pruned to perfect a two-party duopoly. We have to organize around a series of non-negotiable demands. We have to dismantle the array of mechanisms the rich use to control power. We have to destroy the ideological and legal system cemented into place to justify corporate plunder." Well, it's about ripping power away from the cabal of corporate oligarchs and returning it to the citizens. This will happen not by appealing to corporate power, but by terrifying it. And power, as we saw in Baltimore, will be terrified only when we take to the streets. There's no other way. So that is something to think about. As long as you continue to eat their food, watch their television, read their magazines and their newspapers, as long as you continue to listen to their pundits, as long as you buy their dresses and suits and shoes, use their credit cards, then why should they change? And how are you going to make a difference? Getting off the grid makes a difference. I'm Gary Nall. Now, let's hear what George Carlin has to say about we liking war.
We like war. We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old, and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Huh? Can't build a decent car. Can't make a TV set or a VCR worth a f***. Got no steel industry left. Can't educate our young people. Can't get health care to our old people. But we can bomb the s*** out of your country, all right. Especially if your country is full of brown people. That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people. Iraq, Panama, Grenada, Libya, you got some brown people in your country. Tell them to watch the f*** out, or we'll goddamn bomb them. Well, when's the last white people you can remember that we bombed? Can you remember the last white? Can you remember any white people we've ever bombed? The Germans, those are the only ones, and that's only because they were trying to cut in on our action. They wanted to dominate the world. That's our f***. Job. And you probably noticed, I don't feel about that war the way we were told we were supposed to feel about that war, the way we were ordered and instructed by the United States government to feel about that war. My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do, it's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I don't just roll over when I'm told to. Sad to say, most Americans just roll over on command. Not me. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. Nope. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country, who in the case of the Persian Gulf War were nothing more than unpaid employees of the Department of Defense, and who most of the time function as kind of an unofficial public relations agency for the United States government. So I don't listen to them, I don't really believe in my country, and I gotta tell you folks, I don't get all choked up about yellow ribbons and American flags. I consider them to be symbols, and I leave symbols to the symbol-minded.
I'm talking about the fact that a war is, you know, rich old men protecting their property by sending middle-class and lower-class young men off to die. Forget these foolish elections. The owners of this country don't care about the poor and young.
Karl Marx talking to me? The owners of this country are the voters of this country.
You're wrong about that, my friend.
Aren't the owners of this country the voters in this country?
No, elected George Bush? Not. Listen, for politics, these elections are a charade. They are meant to... I'll tell you, listen for a minute. Learn a little something. The elections and politicians are in place in order to give Americans the illusion that they have freedom of choice. You don't really have choice in this country. All of the things that are important, reduced in choice. Newspapers in a city, how many?
That was George Carlin giving us his perspective on this. Also, we've been lied to repeatedly. In fact, I don't think there's a governmental agency that's capable of telling the truth because there's a consequence to telling the truth. For example, they tell us things are great with the economy. We only have a 5% unemployment rate. Well, if that were true, that would be pretty good. But then I started looking for statistics, and here was what I came up with. I found out that we have 28 million part-time people working, and we have 116 million full-time people working. And so that means that we have a lot of people who are not working who could be. And that's dangerous. According to Shadow Stats, we have an actual 23.5% unemployment rate. And when you see how many people could work full-time but are only working part-time, because if they work part-time, they don't get the benefits, it's 6.6 million of those people said, we want to work full-time, but there's no full-time jobs for us. According to a CNBC survey, 40% of unemployed Americans have quit looking for jobs, and that is 3.4 million people. And the Economist reports that there are 2 million unemployed people who have been excluded from the government statistics, and then there's all these other people who, when they stop looking for work, simply vanish. They're no longer on any statistic. So let's just say that you worked hard and then you lost your job and you spent the last 3 years trying to find another job and you just couldn't find one, so you just gave up. Well, you're not alone. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reports 92.9 million people. Listen to that again. 92.9 million people 16 years or older are not participating in the labor force. So how could you say that we have 5% unemployment when we have 92.9% of the American public who are not working and only 116 million who are working full time? It shows you the games they play with numbers, because if they had to tell the truth about how bad it was, and then why is it bad? Well, because you're not paying people a living wage. And so people have to work two or three jobs. Then they would have to change their policies. So as long as they continue to lie, they don't have to change the policies. Also, this is from an editor. This is brand new. quote, becoming the first credentialed, well-known media insider to step forward and state publicly that he was secretly a propagandist. An editor of a major German daily has said that he personally planted stories for the CIA, saying he believes a medical condition gives him only a few years to live and that he is filled with remorse. This particular doctor, the editor of a major Frankfurter newspaper, one of Germany's largest newspapers, said in an interview that he accepted news stories written and given to him by the CIA and published them under his own name. He said that the aim of much of the deception was to drive nations towards war. He says that, quote, the corruption of journalists and major news outlets by the CIA is routine, accepted, widespread in the Western media, and that journalists who do not comply either cannot get jobs of any news or at any news organization or find their careers cut short. So, how about that? Finally telling the truth. I'm Gary Noll. We believe that there is enormous movement afoot and that no one's giving it any attention. That's okay. We're told that there's only one truth, the official truth. Fine. That all you have are people who are Democrats or Republicans, the corporate left, the corporate right. That's who you should listen to. That's who you should vote for. That's whose radio programs are most important. Okay, fine. I believe in freedom of speech. I don't want to see Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or Rachel Maddow without a show. If they can get a show, it's their business. But they're not the only voices out there now. There's a movement that has been under the radar. And you just have to look at the numbers to get an idea how big it is. In the studio right now is Jason, Progressive Radio Network. Jason, every day, every 24 hours, we try to provide several hundred articles on issues you will not find in the New York Times or major media, plus some of the most important progressive authors and philosophers and humanists and ethicists in the world to give commentary on these, plus documentaries they wouldn't see anywhere else. What are the numbers of people coming to get information that they could use?
Just for doing the last year and discuss and looking over the numbers, just on our phone line from Zena Radio, where we go every day 24/7 live, you can listen to whatever we're playing. We had over 7,200,000 minutes listened to. That's amazing in 1 year. That's most in the United States. So that's a very great movement. We have online, which is just our Facebook, we have over 1 million posts reached, which means that people shared our documentaries, our articles, our podcast all over the world with their friends and family to show what we're putting out there. On our just regular
That's PR, just last week.
You know, well, over 100 million was for the year.
For the year. 100 million people for a year.
And then on PRN, just alone, weekly, 200,000 people coming just to go there and look for articles and podcasts on our own. Then we have the YouTube, which just three films, over 3 million views of these films, not searches, views of these films. So on Poverty, Inc., War and Health, and Seeds of Death. And then if you just want to do a Google search for those three films, there's over 565 million searches. People are looking that up on Google. So that's quite impressive and amazing.
Now, we say this only to let people know
Correct.
That in all these movements around the world, whatever is happening, we're going to cover the perspective from a humanist and a progressive perspective, not left or right. So if people want to know, are there other realities, other resources? You bet there are. And people are using them, and it's free. All right, so there's a public service. So thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Gary.
And by the way, for the good people living out on Long Island who come each year to whatever documentary I'm showing there, the last one was about 6 months ago, which was Poverty, Inc., I'm going to be out there on July 26th at noon. That's a Sunday, Huntington Arts Cinema. To screen my newest film. That will be the last showing in the New York area and Saving the Planet. So if you want to come join me then, I'll give you a phone number you can call. This is on July 26, noon, Huntington Arts Cinema, 631-423-7611, 631-423-7611. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.